Ryan Williams, what's going on this week?
Hey, not much. Good to be here. Good to be here. How y'all doing out there?
We're awesome again. Thanks for asking, even though no one can hear
That's
you.
That's right. Yeah. I thought it would be polite to ask, so.
You're so polite.
Exactly.
The whatever that Manners website is, they'd be so proud of you.
That's right. Let's jump into it. Let's jump
awesome.
Into it.
Awesome. So, interesting week in the land of tights and flight and capes and secret identities.
Zombies and whatnot.
So, yes, zombies. Should we start?
Yep,
go talking ahead. About zombies?
Let it rip.
Did you watch Fear of the Walking Dead, Brian Williams?
Of course I did.
Of course you did. Did you watch it live? I think you watched it live.
I watched it live.
I thought I remembered you messaging me while that was going on.
Sunday night is a special time for my children and I. We like to pick a couple of shows and, you know, sit and do some bonding, TV watching together. Walking Dead has been a mainstay for us. And, you know, of course, the Sunday night slot was previously inhabited by Breaking Bad and
Game of Thrones,
Mad Men, you know, good. I mean, this is the greatest time in my life for TV. I mean,
absolutely.
It's the best TV has ever been.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I think like TV has... It's not just the best TV has ever been. It's some of the best just entertainment that we've ever been privy to. And it's thanks to channels like HBO, channels like FX.
Yeah. HBO kicked it off with The Sopranos.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know what? That's unfair. The Sopranos kicked the door open, but I think Sex and the City actually really...
Yeah, I think that was like the first like big deal. Like, holy crap, you gotta go watch this cable show.
Yeah,
like it's worth the $400,000.
See, hear that, ladies? I get some brownie points because I mentioned Sex and the City.
So you would be a Samantha or a Carrie? Is that what they used to say?
I mean, I always loved Sarah Jessica Parker going back to Square Peg. So
that's just because she's from Cincinnati, and we gotta represent the Ohio Mafia.
Gotta represent. Sarah Jessica Parker, SJP.
All right. So speaking of television, speaking of The Walking Dead and zombies, speaking of Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, I'm gonna just dive in. I wasn't feeling it. I was not feeling it from off the rip. I like the chick, the main lady.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of sexy in a homey way and intelligent and not too beautiful, but good looking in a homely way.
Yeah, so it's Kim Dickens, I believe is her
name. Where's she from?
She was on Deadwood. She was in the casino with Powers Booth when his group came in.
Oh, I'm sure I liked her in that too.
She was on Sons of Anarchy for a while. She's been in everything. She was actually in Hollow Man. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, oh yeah, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Invisible Guy.
She was the one who had like the short red hair who wasn't Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah.
So okay.
I like Elizabeth Shue too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah. this is a different podcast called Brian and Brian.
Wah wah. Wah 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 wah. Anyway, okay. So it. You know, I hate agreeing with you.
Why?
Because I feel like we agree a lot. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but
we agree for different reasons, I think.
Yeah. I'll give it.
I didn't like Fear the Walking Dead because a couple of annoying performances, which I don't think there are any bad actors in this show. All of them seem to be good, competent actors. I just was annoyed by the Johnny Depp wannabe dope fiend guy. Nick kind of bothered me a little bit, but it got better as the show went on.
The second half I felt was considerably better than the first half.
Well, we've got another obligatory African American death,
well,
or zombie transformation.
I mean, it's
and just, he's dealing drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
see, I would have thought I thought it'd been interesting to keep him alive and to see him slinging that rock. I've been watching The Wire.
Right.
in the apocalypse
in you zombie know? Form.
Yeah. Like no. Like, these people who are, like, supposed to be trying to, like, prepare for
he just says
fighting for their lives.
That rock.
Lord have mercy. I gotta stop hanging out with you so much.
I don't say
I know
slinging that rock.
Anyway.
He's slinging that rock.
We're just having fun here. What can I say?
Anyway.
Anyway, but no, I thought it'd been interesting to keep that character around, especially with the dynamic that they showed, like, with the two, with him and Nick in that booth. Like, it was that very maternal moment, or paternal moment, where he's like...
Well, how obvious was it that Nick was about to get killed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, oh, this is the Joe Pesci scene in Goodfellas.
Yeah.
You know, where he's a made man with a bullet right to the brain pan.
Right. And so. But, you know, once again, I won't get on my African-American soapbox tonight, but yeah, the guy, black guy, winds up being a drug dealer, which is pretty predictable.
Especially because they set him up as a good kid.
Yeah, and I thought, though, the junkie kid overcomes him, too, way too easily. It's like, he was just hugging him, consoling him, like, I'll take care of you, and then he whips his ass. That didn't really compute with me.
Yeah.
I was like, bullshit, when that happened.
I did not care for the junkie kid. I did not care for his sister.
Why?
She's just a brat. And, like, we already have that. We have Carl. Carl's a brat.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't need to see all the same, like, you know, character tropes that are from The Walking Dead brought over to Fear the Walking Dead. And to be honest, like, you know, obviously we're going to watch the second episode.
What else did you notice about the girl? Hint, hint.
Well, you know, her boyfriend.
And what?
He's probably dead.
But what about her boyfriend?
Well, he's black, of course.
I mean, you didn't feel a diversity grab there?
Yeah, well.
You didn't feel like a nudge?
I mean, the whole thing is, like, reeks of just grab. Like, you know, like, it's...
And that guy that's the boyfriend.
The teacher boyfriend, yeah.
He's excellent.
I liked him.
I've seen him in many things. Mm-hmm. He was in Three Kings.
Yep.
But he plays alternatively. He plays Middle Eastern people and Hispanic.
Yeah.
I think he was in Blow or something of that nature. But and I don't know what his true nationality is.
No.
But he's good.
He is.
He's good, but, you know, just when he takes the mother to the church to find the son, and he's like, stay in the car. Come on, the writing's not as good as I wanted, as crisp as I wanted to be.
And like after what we saw with her, like where she walks up to that cop at the beginning and she's like, is he under arrest and get the F out?
Yeah.
You know, like did he just meet her thinking stay in the car was gonna work?
Yeah.
You know, it showed a very like lack of understanding of who these characters are. But you picked up on that, didn't you? I did.
And it rubbed you. And that's the thing about storytelling. If you betray the art form of storytelling or the characters that you've created, it gives you this unfulfilled sensation.
Yeah.
At the end, at the completion of the story, the movie, the TV show, the comic book. I mean, that's how I feel about it, you know.
Yeah, I think it's funny because it broke like a ton of cable records as far as viewership goes.
We knew it would.
But like the reviews of it were universally bad. I actually waited until last night to watch it so it would be fresh in my head for talking about it today.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just... Yeah.
It's weird how I feel about it. I will watch it again because I know better. This franchise goes through dips.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, in its DNA, in its genetics, it's really good material. So I know it's going to come to something that I'm going to enjoy or like. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
I'm definitely going to keep checking it out. Like, I think I've mentioned before on the show, I give pretty much everything 3 episodes to really, like, intrigue me.
Yeah.
Not necessarily hook me, but definitely intrigue me to keep watching.
I'm just curious about Kirkman. I mean, you know, is he at this point, at some point, every... let's see, creator, entrepreneur, artist sells his soul.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, is this him selling his soul right now?
I don't know, because he's the executive producer and he's like one of the consulting writers, but I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt and say no right now. Mm-hmm. I think there's a few other of his properties that would really be selling his soul to try and make them into a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've got a friend named Johnny that comments.
He's been on the show.
Yeah, he's been on the show. He was on the show a couple episodes ago,
yep.
And he was texting me through Facebook, and I made the comment that The other Walking Dead series, the initial Walking Dead series.
Walking Dead proper, if you will.
Walking Dead proper or real Walking Dead.
Hashtag that.
The first episode was more cinematic. No, it wasn't Johnny. It was Arlie. Is it Arlie?
Yeah. Just Lee.
Lee? Okay. Lee. And he commented that, hey, you know, it was more cinematic because of Frank Darabont's involvement. And that's a good point. But I think a show like The Walking Dead, when it involves zombies, has to be cinematic. It has to have, as much money as they're spending, they have got to make sure people come back to see a spectacle or some type of fulfilling story every week. This wasn't that, but I think it'll get to that, and I'm gonna leave it at that.
I think the majority of pilots are relatively not good. Mm-hmm. And so you have to look beyond that. And so I'm definitely gonna check out the second and third episodes and see. I did not see the trailer for this season on Fear the Walking Dead, so I'm living without that knowledge.
You ever watch The Talking Dead?
I do. I'm a big Chris Hardwick fan. But
so do you know when they show the zombie count or
the moratorium?
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. So what do we think about the zombie appearance in this episode? Was it thrilling? Was it?
They got beaten up really quick for having just turned into zombies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like
I felt the same.
There was a lot of gore where it's like they haven't had enough time to really decompose.
Yeah.
Because like
instantly zombies.
Yeah. And
insta zombie.
Instant. There's your next comic, right?
Exactly.
Insta zombie.
Insta
zombie to the rescue.
But yeah. You do remember in the first episode of Walking Dead, I mean we remember the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
We remember the chick that was stuck to the grass.
Yeah,
was
trying to get to the bike or whatever. I mean, yeah.
No images like that.
No.
That stay with me. The only reason he stays with me is because he was a brother and they were in like a sewer.
They were in that reservoir where Nicolas Cage outran the helicopter in Gone in 60 Seconds.
Didn't see that one.
But in Terminator 2 where they're driving around. But exactly. Yeah, I mean like, yeah. Anyway.
Check it out. It's. I mean, if you're a Walking Dead fan, check it out just for continuity's sake. If you're not a Walking Dead fan, you can go ahead and skip it because you probably won't like it anyway. But I'm a Walking Dead fan. I'm going to keep it real till it pisses me off and then I'll drop it.
So, awesome. Yeah. All right. So our next topic we want to talk about tonight, and you brought this to my attention.
But I want you to say it because you sound better saying it.
Batgirling.
Batgirling.
It's like...
Stop batgirling.
Is that like curling where they put a little cape and cowl on the stones?
All right, listen. Listen, DC has royally, royally screwed themselves this time, and we're seeing all these reports on the internet that they're $2 million behind their financial projections for 2015.
Yeah, so their comic book sales
are
seriously down, and
that's what happens when you throw Superman in a pair of Levi's on a motorcycle, reduce his strength, and give him a buzz cut. And have him running around like, you know, he's one of the dead Kennedys or something. I mean, it's just, it's just, why do that? Why did you do that?
Yeah. I don't know. So we're looking on.
That's like making Mickey Mouse like a rat on steroids and, you know, making him have rabies and, you know, he has red eyes. Why would you do that?
I'm not sure.
I mean, you. I understand, and that's what the term batgirling means. Batgirling, what I understand it means, that at some point, DC artists and writers were given the carte blanche to
create,
you know, massively, not massively, that's the wrong word, to experiment and explore with these characters. And I don't have a problem with that. I like experimentation and exploration. But not to the point where you jeopardize the identity of the character.
And you know, I think jeopardizing the identity of the characters really started with the PU-52.
Who do you think the character who was most affected by PU-52? I like Superman. That, by the way.
Superman was the most affected. They took away his moral center, if you will, where instead of being like the all-American farm boy in love with Lois Lane, like looking to help people, he was more Kryptonian. He just identified more with his Kryptonian roots earlier on than really like the character we're used to.
Now here's where I'm gonna hit you.
Yeah.
And be somewhat critical of you if you don't answer this question right. Did you read Action Comics by Grant Morrison, and did you read the George Perez Superman?
I read the first four issues of each.
I had hope for the George Perez Superman. Mm-hmm. I liked the first two issues of Grant Morrison's Action Comics, and then it slid off into what?
They both got really kind of divergent from each other.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, like Morrison's, he was a younger hero. It was kind of like, whatever, like right when he was discovering Superman.
And I understand that, but there was no synergy to those two books.
No, none.
And I love Grant Morrison, but there are things that I dislike about him, and I'm sure it was because he demanded Superman be a younger character.
I would have liked to seen in the Morrison book,
yeah,
setting the foundation for the hero that we got in the Perez book.
Yes.
And like you said, there wasn't that synergy. So,
but I don't know how Grant Morrison wrote All-Star Superman and then just fumbled Action Comics terribly.
So the DC tells editors, stop backgirling, go back to meat and potatoes, is the headline of this Bleeding Cool article we're looking at.
Yep.
I think the key takeaway is DC tells editors. There's people in DC who are in charge.
Mm-hmm.
That don't care.
Who would that be?
This guy named Dan.
DD? Daredevil?
Some guy who used to draw really, really well and now does I don't know what.
I call him P. Diddy.
And the Vince Russo of comic books.
You know what? I think... Do you pronounce it Didio? Didio? I think he's the fall guy. Sorry, Chris Carter fans. I had to throw that Fall Guy reference out there.
Yeah, but nowhere in
Brian
this article,
has no idea what I'm talking about because he's not really...
Lee Majors?
No.
That awesome truck?
Chris Carter.
Oh.
Fall Guy.
Yeah, sorry.
ESPN.
Yes, yes, yes.
Anyway.
Minnesota Vikings. Ha ha Yeah, you know, I'm just looking at this article and that you sent over yesterday and, you know, just kind of in awe at how DC's let it get this far.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked a little bit about Marvel last week.
But see, that's the crazy thing. Marvel's doing the exact same thing, really.
And it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, Marvel, did you not learn anything from your competition?
I think you hit the nail on the head the other day, though. DC, Marvel always has a backup plan.
Yeah.
DC doesn't. DC no. just goes willy-nilly, butt-naked wild into the clear blue yonder, and then they don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So then they rely on cats like Jim Lee.
Yeah.
Jim Lee. Jim Lee's a great artist, although he hasn't focused much on art lately.
It's been years.
Yeah. He doesn't particularly have great ideas. He just doesn't.
No.
That doesn't mean he's a bad for DC Comics. But maybe you should try somebody else now.
Let's let Jim Lee go back to drawing covers.
Yeah.
And let's have like a creative team come in. There's a lot of people at Dark Horse, editors who could come in and really shake things up. I mean,
let's be honest. Jim Lee used to sell comics based on his name
because his art was for the 90s, like, let's be honest, his art was pretty freaking awesome.
But I think he basically destroyed that with the Frank Miller All-Star Batman, and that was kind of like a project that didn't go his way.
No.
He did an Azzarello Superman project that was
I think part of the reason too is it seems like a Jim Lee book is always late.
Always late.
And that's just kind of another thing.
And then it looks generic. He starts to draw all of his male faces kind of look the same.
Like Alex Ross, they all look like him.
Look at his Bruce Wayne. and look at his Clark Kent.
Yeah.
They both kind of look the same. They both had the same physical.
So I have a question for you then.
Yeah.
Like you say, like his art becomes boring or.
It looks good.
Yeah.
But it's like a factory.
Is it because there's the artists that are out now were inspired by him in the 90s as they were coming up and learning to draw? And
dude, I think like, I think the artwork that we see in comics now is way quirkier and way better than it was in the 90s. I thought there were a lot of guys in the 90s that were aping Jim Lee and Todd McFarlane and Rob Liefeld.
So do you think these, you know, quote unquote kids now who are like, you know, the guys and girls like Fiona Staples, like, what's his name? Like Patrick Gleason, those guys. Have they just surpassed someone like Jim Lee? Where
I think they
make his art look less inspiring.
I think Jim Lee is like I hate to always use this example, but I think he was like Crayola crayons to them, and they've graduated to colored pencils or.
Sure. Whatever those cool markers are, exactly, that, like, those, are like $30 a marker.
Day-glow mark. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, they've graduated, and that's good. That's good, and he served his purpose, and he's helped DC make a lot of innovations to their lines. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't have good ideas.
Everyone has a collar now.
That's not a good idea. You know.
Oh, I thought that was the innovation you were talking about. My bad. I totally misunderstood there. I apologize.
You know what I really like that Jim Lee made happen was because of Wildstorm, he created Stormwatch and the Authority.
Yeah.
And Midnighter, which you like Midnighter because Midnighter's been absorbed into the Batman Grayson mythology. Which is kind of cool because Midnighter was a Batman knockoff anyway.
Right.
You know, but I think he's good for some things. I don't know why Wildcats hasn't appeared yet in the DC universe, but, you know.
I'm sure that's some licensing, something.
Probably because they're too much like the X-Men.
But, yeah.
You know, but anyway, DC has painted themselves into a corner. Will they get out of it? They're betting a lot on Batman and Superman.
So that leads us to a great point. Thank you for lobbing that softball up for me to just
knock it out the park.
A couple weeks ago we heard this awesome news that George Miller, Mad Max Fury Road, should have been Justice League.
And he was supposed to do
a Justice League movie
years ago.
Yeah. It started filming. It was like 8 weeks into production.
Concept art was made and everything.
Yeah. They had a cast.
The beautiful woman in that desert scene in Fury Road. Remember when she took her little thing off? She was supposed to be Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. She could have played it too. She was gorgeous.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, it's perfect. I mean, like.
You got women
like,
on the mind this episode. Hmm, what the hell is going
interesting.
On?
Interesting.
Exactly.
So, Brian.
We're going to stop.
Let's just cut that out right now. Okay, so we got word he was supposed to direct Man of Steel 2.
Yeah.
And then earlier this week,
we got word. Very excited about that, too.
Yeah, I remember getting a very excited message from you, like, did you see this? And I was like, I did not. And then I replied back, holy shit. Man of Steel 2, George Miller, after everything he did with Mad Max, everything... we know of him as a storyteller, getting away from Zack Snyder, like super excited about that.
Yeah.
No pun intended. And then we find out that the Man of Steel 2 is now indefinitely
permanently.
Is it permanently on hold now? Did they change it? Cause it was indefinitely.
No, I mean, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Permanently on hold.
Can't they just say canceled?
Well, people say that to me at work too. Yeah. I'm a permanent hire. Really? You're working there for the rest of your life. Okay. You're not going to get fired. You're not going to quit. You know, that bothers me. Permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Permanent means, here's what permanent means, infamous podcasters. Permanent means we don't have the balls to do Superman right. We want to keep swinging from Batman's cape and depend on him for everything because we're scared. We can't do anything else. We want to do dark and gritty because that's what the kids like. And we don't have the courage to do Superman right.
But is it what the kids like? Because Marvel doesn't really do dark and gritty. And those movies make $1 billion.
How is it? See, this is another thing that bothers me.
I think it's a fair question.
How does Marvel... Okay, let's talk about Marvel doesn't do dark and gritty.
Daredevil was dark.
Well, No. But, well, let's just look at this. Yeah. Let's look at this. Gritty. Gritty is sign language for realistic.
Okay.
All right. So how is Marvel... I mean, we're talking about superheroes here.
Right.
How is Marvel not realistic? Marvel's always, to me, been more realistic than DC. Let's take a look.
In the comics? Absolutely.
Well, let's take a look at the Avengers. Mm-hmm. Okay. You've got a guy that was a soldier. It was in World War II.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fairly realistic. Okay.
German scientists experimented on him.
That's fairly realistic.
That stuff happened.
Now, we're selling comic books here, folks, so we got to throw some fantasy in there.
Let's freeze him for 70 years.
So let's give him a super serum, make him strong, or else you're not going to read Captain America.
Right.
Okay? Thor is Norse mythology.
Right.
Okay? That's probably the most fantastic of the Marvel characters in terms of getting out there fantasy-wise. Yeah,
like, wait a second, what's happening here? Because, you have the Hulk.
The Hulk is Gamma Bomb.
Yeah, it was the
army base.
The age of the splitting the atom and you know, what happens if a bomb blows up and...
So to me, all of that is a little bit more realistic than a cat coming from another planet in a little spaceship. A guy that has no superpowers but beats everybody's ass.
Right.
A cat that has a ring from another planet. Another dude that's a hawk policeman from another planet.
Yeah.
And an Amazon. I mean... DC is not more realistic. As much as these Warner Brother execs and these Jim Lees and the Dan Didios, P. Diddy, would like to tell you that DC is more realistic, it's not. And to me, that's why I think Marvel is grittier.
And I think you're missing another nice, like, realism, gritty take in Marvel's column. There are stories happening in New York City. There are stories happening in San Francisco.
Yes.
There are stories happening in Los Angeles.
Real world locations.
The DC, it's the, you know, Gotham is a stand-in for New York. Metropolis is a stand-in for whatever the big city in the middle of Kansas is.
Right.
But that's an excellent point. I never thought of it that way. When I say gritty, I'm thinking that just like dark, you know, brooding... steaming pile of whatever you want to call it that Chris Nolan gave us.
But everybody doesn't walk around and do that all day.
No.
That was that character.
Yeah.
That was Batman.
It's Batman. Yeah. And it's not even Batman for the entire history of his run. It's
right.
Batman in the last 15 years, 20 years.
Yeah. Well, and Batman, when Batman got his groove back, so to speak, it was with angst.
Yeah.
It was with gothic. It was with shadows. Mm-hmm. It was with grit. It was with that Frank Miller punch.
I am the knight.
And that continues to be popular. And that's cool. But you don't have to do it with everybody. Ant-Man was pretty gritty. Think about the grittiness of Ant-Man. He's in prison.
It opens with a prison, you know, quote-unquote fight scene.
Yeah.
It doesn't get grittier than that.
He's in prison.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the next piece of grit? The spy stuff, the spy mission that Hank Pym was on with his wife.
Yeah,
that was grit. I mean, that's gritty. That was an intense scene,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't dark outside. There weren't people walking around with mascara and capes on.
Nobody had guy lying around.
Yeah, you know. So I don't get that. I think executives and people that spin doctors out there. Try to tell us what things are, and the dummies, the morons, the people that are just cattle out there, follow this spin and go with it. Well, this is dark and gritty. Really? Well, this is dark and gritty too. Oh yeah, that is gritty. And this is gritty without dark. You know what I'm saying? It's just it's unbelievable.
It's
why not just tell a good story instead of worrying about what's dark and gritty?
Yeah.
And if something happens to be dark and gritty, let it be that.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, even Daredevil. Daredevil gets a bad rap because Daredevil did succeed when it became more dark and gritty, but Daredevil had wonderful stories and adventures in the daylight.
I mean, he was always, like, Matt Murdock always was a positive person.
Right.
I mean, he has every reason to be dark and gritty, and I mean, maybe that's part of where the Devil of Hell's Kitchen is that release
right.
for him. But, yeah, I mean, he's... At the end of the day, he's hopeful.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, please.
I'm very curious, because you won't ever expound upon this for me. Why do you think DC is... How on earth could you cancel production on a Superman movie? Why are they scared to do this guy?
I don't think they've ever gotten... Like, I know you like the...
Superman the movie. Christopher Reeve. I love it. My son told me the other day where Devin, who's also been on this show.
Hasn't been on this
exactly,
show?
Exactly. Devin told me the other day, he was like, you know, Dad, I didn't want to watch Superman the movie. You pissed me off because you kept wanting me to watch it. And when I finally watched it, I was like, wow. I was pulled into this thing. I loved it. I've wanted to watch it again. And it's like, I didn't know Superman was that character. I said, that's crazy. That's the Superman I grew up with. I don't get it, man. I feel like a Superman apologist.
I think Chris Reeve made such a iconic version in the mind's eye of the mass populace that nobody has been good enough since. I felt Brandon Routh look, feel, tone, both Clark, both Superman, was spot on.
Yeah.
He just got saddled with a horrible director and an awful script.
But most of the fanboys love Bryan Singer.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't either.
So.
But we'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely. We'll talk.
I didn't mean to play you like you usually play me, but we'll go to that later.
Anyway, no, you know, I don't know if there's a good answer to that. I think it's just one of those things where the climate of the world today, the idea of someone who stands for quote unquote truth, justice, and the American way has people concerned about, well, how will this open in China? You know, what's the box office like this going to look like in Australia?
But he didn't get to be the icon that he is because he was gritty.
No, he's, and you know, the biggest problem I had with this movie is, you know, Russell Crowe had the voiceover like, they'll follow you into the sun. Where the hell is the sun in that entire movie? Where?
Yeah.
You know, I
could really, I know we have a time limit tonight because we usually run way long and try to do 2-hour shows. We're trying to keep it to a tight 45 minutes a night and see how that works. But we just got too much to say. And I could go on about this all night. But we're gonna keep doing the Team Superman, Team Batman stuff. Did you see the Mike Zeck?
Yeah, that you shared.
Could you? That was cool.
That was awesome.
That was really cool.
So everybody go to our Facebook wall and check out the picture Brian shared of this awesome Batman art by this artist named Mike Zeck. Thank you, Christian, for calling us out on not attributing the
Christian,
the
and
art,
I want you
artist.
To and Christian, I want you to also, every time I miss a writer's name, I want you to also guard them too, because you know we need representation as
Wait, writers are involved in comic books?
Oh no, the artists just
only
do it.
Artists.
No. You
where
know
do
what?
They get the ideas for their stories?
On the real tip though, Christian, I mean, and all artists and all writers out there, if you ever see that we don't post your name or post, you know, who was responsible for this work, call us out, because you're right. You need to be represented. I've seen my stuff on a couple of websites, you know, my book, and the artist has been named, and I haven't been named as a writer, and I've been pissed. So
yeah, sorry about that. I didn't mean to do that to you.
It's all right. So anyway, we're going to move along, but chime in on the Superman, Batman thing. I mean, it's an age-old conversation. It's probably what's going to make all of us go see. This is probably all by design. We're all going to be, worked up about all this stuff, and then we're going to go see Batman versus Superman, and it's going to break all records. So, I mean, I can feel it.
It comes out in March next year, and
I can feel the anticipation.
Civil War, Captain America Civil War, doesn't come out for like 4 weeks after that. There is literally nothing in between that time to keep Batman versus Superman from being a success, other than if it's a crappy movie.
I do have a feeling, though, and I want to say this to you, America. No. I think Batman and Superman is going to be good.
Okay.
But I think Civil War is going to kick it square in its ass. And I think Marvel knows it has everybody on the ropes in terms of how they do superhero movies.
Yeah.
I mean, Ant-Man is just a thrilling, shining example of that. And I think Marvel is going to go for the jugular with Civil War. And it so far, I'm trying not to get too excited because I was so excited for Ultron. So excited for Age of Ultron. When I saw that There's No Strings on Me preview.
Oh, how creepy was that?
I almost like broke down into elements. You know what I mean? And I don't want that to happen to me because ultimately I was disappointed by Ultron.
Yeah.
But and we'll talk about this later, but Ultron, Age of Ultron is weird because I oddly find myself waiting for it on DVD and streaming.
So we had a chance to watch it the other night.
Really?
Haley and I again, and my wife, I got a screener copy of it. And I looked at it less critically this time around, and like, I did enjoy it. I had fun watching the movie.
Yeah.
But I still left with and I still had all the same problems I had with it, but I noticed some things that I probably didn't notice the first time around, because I saw it twice in the theater, and the only reason I went back the second time is because, you know, the kid bot and the wife Tron wanted to go see it, and, you know, I'm in charge of taking them to superhero movies.
Right.
So I was much less critical, and I did enjoy it much more. I also think I enjoyed it more because I could just pause it and walk away when I was getting frustrated with all the robotic sarcasm.
Right.
So.
Well, and the problem is, my major problem with the movie is you have a first-rate, horrific villain in Ultron that you could do a lot with, and then you just basically reduce him to a global computer virus.
Anonymous could have done that.
Yeah. You know, so... Yeah, I just thought that was kind of lazy, but of course, one day Joss Whedon is going to come out with a tell-all book. And, you know,
Kevin Feige beat me.
You know what? Allegedly. Another quick thing that got announced this week, and my second father in life, Jeff, the owner of the comic book store, told me that Blade is going to be relaunched as a female. And it would be Blade's daughter.
Right.
And, I told Jeff.
Did you not know it was the daughter?
No, I told Jeff this.
Yeah.
And Jeff goes, no. You didn't see the rebuttal to that? Joss Whedon is got a beef with Marvel over that because of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So that's been canceled.
Oh, all
and
right.
I said, I would pray to the gods above that that's the case. But... I don't know that that's true. So anyway, that was and I thought that was interesting because of what we got into last week.
So if that's true, good listeners, please let us know.
Yeah, please. Somebody chime in. Somebody say something. And it's not that, well, I'm not even going to go into it.
All right.
Let's do Copa Drop.
Yeah, so what'd you read this week?
I read Kanan, The Last Padawan, the Star Wars book. Which I would never touch any of these Star Wars books had it not been for you.
Sorry.
I read that. That's Justice, JLA 3. Yeah, JLA 3 by Brian Hitch. Do your thing, Brian Hitch. Brian Hitch, where you get them writing chops from, boy? hey, Brian, kudos. This is coming from possibly the most critical reader you have out here. Kudos, bruh. I'm feeling you. I'm feeling you. Keep doing your thing. It ain't perfect. It ain't brilliant, but I'm liking it. And I also read Cyborg.
So, all right, cool. What I liked about JLA is when Barry essentially abandoned Hal because the Speed Force pulled him back to where he needed to be. And then all the... because, not to spoil, like, anything too much, but where
You know what I was thinking about? I was thinking about this. Spoil. You know why? Because people won't read it. Okay. They're reading... Yeah, spoil it.
Okay, great.
Because so, if we tell them what's going on...
So Green Lantern, when he and Flash had their clown shoes moment and they fell through a wormhole together, tumbling through time and space.
It's not a clown shoes like moment. It's a great moment.
Like the TARDIS just bouncing all over.
This is a book about ideas.
Anyway, they end up on Krypton 250,000 years ago. All right, I dug that. The second thing I dug the most...
Did you hear what he said?
Is when...
Say it again.
I dug it. I liked
it. No, before that.
I dug that.
250,000
years ago.
In Krypton's past.
Krypton's past.
That's dope. Who's done that?
He gets recognized as a Green Lantern.
As a Green Lantern.
And they're like, "That's cool. You guys are cool. Why don't you come have dinner with us?" And it's like...
And then they begin the march towards Kandor.
And Rao. I saw Kandor and I was like... I almost bought it just for the mention of Kandor.
Well, let's talk, though, about your love-hate relationship with Rao. Did it get better this issue?
I see where it's going. Like, or I see where it's coming from. I don't see where it's going because it's only three issues
Rao's
in.
Rao's pretty cool.
I want Rao to be really cool. I really do.
Do you know why I like it? Because of all it's this Superman's God stuff.
Yeah.
Well, this takes that
this
out
This is
of...
Superman's God.
Yes. And that takes away... And... I don't know. Now, Brian Hitch, your writing is pretty good. Your writing is really good, but I think it's caused your art to fall off a couple steps.
Do you think that, so as a writer artist, the time constraints of a 4-week book, is that too much?
I think for him.
Because his America's Got Powers book, I loved.
Did he write and draw that?
I don't know if he drew it. I think he did because the characters look really similar.
I was about to
similar.
Say, how could you not like the art, recognize
it's,
his art?
Yeah, and I'm just kind of having a brain fart. I love that book, but like the last issue didn't come out for months and months after like the penultimate issue. And so, but no, I did enjoy that. I'm on the fence of giving this more of a shot.
Cool things. Here's another cool thing real quick about JLA by Brian Hitch. Wow. The way Green Lantern talks to his ring. He's talking to his ring and the ring's actually talking back to him, telling him things about where he's at, where Flash went.
Unknown.
But here's also what I hated about that. Wonder Woman is talking to that oraculum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's doing the same thing, like unknown, unknown. And I'm like, no. Don't use the same.
Yeah.
Those are dissimilar technologies. Green Lantern's talking to his ring. Wonder Woman is talking to this statue called the Oraculum, wherever she's at in her little limbo. But Batman and Superman have another cool conversation.
Yeah.
And I don't like the way Hitch draws Batman, but I like the shit that he has Batman saying.
Yeah.
Batman is saying some cold-blooded shit in JLA. I mean, not cold-blooded stuff that is cliched and meant to sound cool. Stuff that's like, damn, I can't believe Batman just said that shit. Batman's cold-blooded. That's the kind of stuff, that's the kind of writing that's jumping off in JLA. But anyway.
All right, so for you, this is a cop.
Cop till you drop.
For me, it's a continue to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. But you're turning.
I did like this issue significantly more than the second issue. Okay, so you talked about like some cool Batman stuff that happened. Let's lead into We Are Robin.
Okay.
I don't know. You picked it up.
I picked it up just for sake of continuing the story. I don't know if it's the greatest story. I like the art. I like the concept. It's dragging a little bit. And I'm probably going to wait till I can read them all in one sitting again.
You're
going
to wait to collect it?
Yeah. Unfortunately. Right. I mean, I really like the art. What's the artist's name again? I mean, he's a fairly popular guy. We're slipping.
I know, sorry.
We're a comic book commentary. Look on the front cover.
So I enjoyed this. This is their first...
Kari Randall.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
So this is the first meeting with the Batman.
Yeah. I did see that.
So I'm interested to see kind of where that goes, and then the little thing is, I guess they all meet Batgirl next week.
Yeah, I saw that too.
So, you know, I'm going to continue to keep it as a cop for right now, just to see where it goes. But yeah, I agree. It's starting to drag, and if pick up quickly, it'll fall by the wayside.
You know what it reminds me of? Like, I'm like super geeky, and super like, I just like cool, looking at cool stuff, and I really want to like the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Because there's all these different alternate versions of Spider-Man.
Spider-Noir.
And they look cool running around together. But then when you read it, it's like, what is this about?
The Spider-Verse was cool. The Secret War Spider-Verse, I'm not loving.
I have the Spider-Verse stuff. Yeah. You and I disagree on that. I don't think it's cool. I think it's a bunch of gobbledygook. But it's cool to look at.
Yeah, I've also been reading the last, 150 episodes of Amazing Spider-Man, so
yeah,
I was a little more prepared for that.
Yeah, I just.
All right, so the other book that we both read this week.
Lando
Calrissian.
I like Calrissian.
Calrissian.
That's how Billy D says
Is it. Billy D? So
I'm Lando Calrissian.
I loved...
Hit Leia. Han is working on the Millennium Falcon.
When Han gets frozen in carbonite, baby.
Exactly.
You come on.
It's me and you. King Cobra.
We're already in the clouds. King Cobra.
Cold 45.
I
gets it every time.
I'm loving the hell out of this book.
I am too.
It's fun.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I just remembered something funny.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Something funny.
Okay. It's fun. It has a cool twist at the end of every issue,
and it has a Star Wars vibe.
It does.
It stays true to Star Wars.
And his supporting cast,
yes,
is an infinite well of cool story.
Now, Lobot irritates me a little bit with his more.
But they explained that a little bit as to why he was irritating.
Well, he has like these like current like. Pop culture like references.
Oh, that, yeah.
What is that about?
I don't know.
I don't like that.
I think that's just lazy writing.
That's distracting.
It is. It takes you out. They did
Lando's perfect. He's spot on. The little Ugnaught dude.
Yeah, with the monocle.
Yeah.
So as I hold my hand up to show the monocle, right, because I got an audio podcast.
And then there's these two Black Panther
dudes.
The
twins.
Yeah, yeah.
Who were cool.
You've got to look at this
now,
book.
When you got to
about.
The end, and like you saw kind of the aftermath of what had happened, did you think like it was a switcheroo going on, or were you like,
I was like whoa,
because I was like wait a second, because it kind of looks like something is happening, but then it's like, wait a second, no, this happened and it's because of, oh,
now so here's what we're gonna do. This podcast works differently than other podcasts. We're gonna work in reverse. Fuck spoilers. If I don't spoil this, then you won't read it.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to go out and buy Lando.
I don't know. I kind of feel like the last two pages are worth waiting for.
Well, I'm going to say this. One, there's a brilliant scene where these two Star Destroyers are trying to lock in on a ship that Lando has stolen.
The Palpatine ship.
Palpatine. Emperor Palpatine is trying to capture...
It's his favorite space yacht.
This ship that Lando has stolen, and he wants to get it at all costs. And both of these Star Destroyers try to trap the ship in tractor beams simultaneously.
And he pulls what can only be described as a Lando Calrissian move.
A Lando Calrissian Han Solo Chewie move.
Yeah.
Because that's what Han Solo and Chewie would have done. But Lando, I feel like, is a part of that trio.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what does he do?
What does who do? Lando?
Just tell him what the... Because it was awesome.
He evades the tractor beams and causes both Star Destroyers to Do they pull towards each other?
He flies in so that they both catch him. The beams cross. Yeah, so it has the Ghostbusters moment. You don't cross the streams. Right. So he flies in between the tractor beams. So as they both try to lock onto him, they lock onto each other.
They lock on each other.
And because they're such big targets, they just...
And then he jumps into hyperspace.
It was awesome.
He was gone. So. And that's another reason why you should pick up the book. And Brian's right. I'm not going to spoil the last scene. All I'm going to say is the ship belongs to the Sith. And that's why Palpatine wants it. And I'll let you play with it from there. But one scene I wanted to mention to you. And it's funny. It goes with our diversity thing. It goes with our whole racial undertones, overtones, whatever you want to call them. And I talked with Christian about this. I sent him a text. I said, am I being too... I didn't even send it to you because wanted to catch you by surprise. Okay,
I'm ready.
Okay, the Ugnaught that is on the ship with the monocle that is standing behind Lando, when they're getting chased by the Empire, the Ugnaught thinks, wow, you're an idiot. You got us caught by the Empire. We're going to kill you. And puts a knife to Lando's neck. So Lando, in his usual smooth-talking way, tries to get himself out of it and says, hey, this is an advantage. The Ugnaught calls Lando a lying Nick. N-I-K. And I'm just like, I'm reading the comic book on my off day, and I'm like, I throw it up in the air. I'm like, did they just call Lando a lying Nick? And so I sent Christian Colbert, my collaborator, co-creator, and artist on Lucius Hammer and Harlem Shadow, I call him. I say, am I seeing things? Am I looking too deeply into this? Did he just call him a lying Nick? And so Christian goes, slow down. It might be that's not how your voice sounds, Christian. I'm sorry. Slow down. It might be Star Wars terminology or something. So he Googles it, and a Nick is a like a Benedict Arnold amongst the rebels. But I'm like, you couldn't have found another word?
He couldn't have called him like a nerf herder?
Yeah, right. A Nick. But I'll let that go. Is it Charles Soleil?
Yeah.
Soleil. Yeah. Charles Soleil.
Soul,
whatever your name is.
Whatever. Keep it up.
Yeah, besides the use of the word Nick, which don't ever use that again, we really like Lando.
All right, so I did not, and I have not read this last series yet, Kane and the Last Padawan.
Yeah, I feel like a just straight nerd talking about Star Wars.
And I haven't read it because I'm intentionally waiting for the trade on this one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's just my foot.
All right.
Because I want to wait and I want to read this one all at once because I have enjoyed the Star Wars Rebel cartoon where he was introduced so much that I just feel like I need to consume this all at once. So I'm being patient for a change.
Well, I kind of felt like I wasn't enjoying the Star Wars books that you enjoy. Yeah. Like you like Vader.
Yeah, I do like Vader.
You like the regular Star Wars proper book and you like Leia.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not very interested in Leia. I look page through it. Put it to you like this. I might enjoy them as I immerse myself more in Lando and Kanan Last Padawan. Now, Kanan Last Padawan, I picked it up because I like the artwork.
Yeah.
And I say, well, all right, well, if Brian is not reading this, I'll choose this one to read and review. I'm hooked. Folks, I mean, you know,
I think you only got one more issue left too.
I'm because he's grown now.
Yeah, it's a mini series, and so the next two
I'm not feeling that.
Yeah, the next two mini series are Chewbacca and then Rogue Squadron. So
that's okay. But,
yeah.
That's
okay. So okay. So Lando,
it doesn't have to go on forever. That's the.
But more than six issues would be nice. Wouldn't it?
It would be. But here's the deal. Another adventure about a young Jedi, and he's kind of got a, you know what, I couldn't help but thinking this, it's like if Robin was a Jedi. That's what it came off to me as.
Okay.
This young kind of like scrappy little tough adventurer, and he hooks up with this really well drawn insect like dude who's a mercenary. I think he might have been a Jedi too at some point.
All right.
And kind of a rough rider type dude, but it's It's very enjoyable. It's lightweight. And it takes place in the Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith period of time.
Yeah.
Which I think is pretty cool. So, yeah, I give it two big, big thumbs up. Awesome. I enjoyed it.
All right. Well, our part of this for this week is going to end for this week. We have an awesome interview. We had the co-director of OTR Improv here in Cincinnati come in and sit down with us for a few minutes and talk about a big improv festival they have coming up. It's called IF Cincy. That stands for Improv Festival. It's September 10th through the 13th. His name is Dave Powell. And if you hold on for just a minute, he will be one of the next voices you hear. All right. And here's Dave. I've got a good friend of mine here today to talk to us a little bit about an awesome improv event that's happening in Cincinnati, September 10th through the 13th. I'll let the man introduce himself.
Hello, my name is Dave Powell. I am co-director of OTR Improv and one of the producers of the Improv Festival of Cincinnati, IF Cincy for short.
So, IF Cincy, this is the third?
Second year
yes. of the IF Cincy. And you guys have some exciting news with some guests and things that are happening. I was perusing the website earlier, and I saw one of my personal improv heroes, Kevin McDonald, is going to be a presenter or a performer and doing some of the workshops. Is that right?
Yes. Kevin McDonald from Kids in the Hall of Fame, probably one of the best sketch shows of all time. He is coming in and he is going to be doing a workshop all day Saturday, and it is an actual improv into writing workshop where you can spend 6 hours with Kevin McDonald. He'll go over, because he's got a Second City background, and that's actually what they used to do with Kids in the Hall, was improvise to develop some of their sketches. And we're going to do 6 hours of that, and then as part of his show that evening, he's going to choose some of the sketches that come out of the class that day to actually be presented during his part of the show.
Very cool. To be a part of that workshop, do you have to be someone who does improv? Can you be a fan of improv? Someone who's just now for the very first time listening to this podcast hearing about improv?
We will allow anyone to register to take this class, most awesome. Certainly.
And does it cost? So, what's it cost?
That class is $180. I know that's pretty steep for some people. There are other workshops that we offer as well. There is actually some workshops about just getting into improv, as well as some more advanced workshops. You can always go to ifcincy.com, or you can go to otrimprov.com, and there is information there. There's, I think, a general 6 to 7 different workshops going on all that day. So if there's something like a 6-hour commitment you don't want to make to dive in the deep end, you can definitely dive into the shallow end and maybe take something more along your speed.
Very cool. So, I mean, Kevin isn't the only big deal. I mean, you have improv groups from all over the country. You've got Portland, a couple groups from Los Angeles, Detroit, and I know you're very fond of the Detroit comedy and improv scene in general, Chicago and Indianapolis. What can people look forward to with some of these performances and even the workshops from these other groups?
Each night there is a different flavor. If we go, and the festival goes from September 10th through the 13th. Starting on Thursday night is our locals night. Mm-hmm. So that will be a bunch of other local troops besides OTR Improv. We have the Basement Dwellers, Highly Improbable, and Ain't No Mango. Ain't No Mango is actually a troupe from NKU. It's a college troupe, a very young theater group that's very good. We've had them come out to some of our shows. And then that night we actually have an improv jam where anyone will actually be able to get up and play after they play.
Oh, nice. So like you can just hop out of the crowd and hop up on stage.
Exactly, yeah.
And say no.
Yes, you can do that. I'm not exactly sure how that will look show-wise, but you definitely can do it. And then that's Thursday night. Then mm-hmm. Friday night, we'll have shows at the No Theater. We have shows going on downstairs at 7 o'clock, and then we have shows going up on their main stage at 9 o'clock.
Very cool.
And that night, I mean, we've got on 7 o'clock, Dude Sickle, who's from Indianapolis, B&B from Portland, and we've actually just added the Fun Fun Boys from Chicago. We happened to be up in the Detroit Improv Festival and saw them, and we added them to our show. We actually had a group, unfortunately, that had to pull out the last minute, and so we were able to fill in with the Fun Fun Boys, and they had an amazing set up at the Detroit Improv Festival, and we look forward to having them here. And then that night, the 9 o'clock show, Human Amusements and Mission Improbable. Human Amusements is a troupe of all of my friends from Detroit.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic. They're absolutely great. It's always a pleasure to see them. And then Mission Improbable is a troupe that is actually has a theater out in L.A., the West Side Theater. Mm-hmm. They also produce a national touring company that usually goes around colleges and stuff like that. A friend of mine from the old days, Kevin Brannick from one of my old troupes, is actually part of them now. And one of our current members, Jeff Durand, started Mission Improbable. And Mission Improbable, one of their more famous alumni is Epic Lloyd from Epic Rap Battles.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Did you just watch the, I guess it was the season finale with Stan Lee versus Jim Henson?
Yes.
And that's pretty awesome. And then Walt Disney shows up.
And you have that moment, it hit me, I was like, oh my gosh, everything that is precious to me is now controlled by Disney.
The House of the Mouse.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
But yeah, so like on the podcast, we like to say when something's really cool, we call it certified infamous. And like that Epic Rap Battle was probably from like my perspective and you know, kind of yours as well with the comics and just pop culture geekery was for me completely certified infamous.
Absolutely loved it. Like that one ranked up there with the Obama and Romney one.
Yeah,
that
was good.
Like
too.
It was just absolutely fantastic.
Did you see the Keanu Reeves or not the Keanu Reeves, the Bill and Ted one versus who was it?
It was the Time Travelers.
Yeah, it was the Time Travelers. Oh, no, it was Bill and Ted versus Lewis and Clark.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes,
which exactly was hilarious. Was.
Yes,
like I went into that one thinking I'm gonna be totally on Bill and Ted's side for this, and I left like, man, Lewis and Clark own them. So
I also just love that idea of going in and thinking you're gonna love one, and it's just two characters rapping
yes,
each other.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, I absolutely loved, and this goes along with the theme of this show, is definitely the Batman versus Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And then you have Watson and Robin get involved.
Yeah.
God, I love that one.
And was it Superman versus Goku? Was another
yes.
good one?
Yep.
So
yeah.
Awesome, man. So, you know, this might be a little too local for people not in Cincinnati, but we've known each other for a lot of years. I've mm-hmm. seen you do many hours of improv.
Graciously suffered through a lot of shows.
Gladly. At the old, what was it, Sudsy Malone's, which
yes.
I don't think that's there anymore.
It is not.
It's
no.
sad tier.
Yeah.
So, you know, just talk a little bit about how the improv community has changed in Cincinnati in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, because it seems like you guys got in with the No Theater three mm-hmm. or 4 years ago. You do your big Christmas show every year.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when you were seeing shows, and it was a very long time mm-hmm. ago, it's now I'm thinking about like over 10 years ago, which is amazing
yeah,
to think
yeah.
about. It was just...
What was the name of that group?
That was Trespassers Only.
That's right, Trespassers
yep.
Only. I was trying to think about that earlier.
Today. Yeah, and back then there was just a few different troops, and it was very nomadic. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of compared the improv scene in Cincinnati to, like, Native American tribes. Like,
yeah.
you've got all these different tribes and stuff like that, and together, unified, they're amazing, but there's just, they're kind of all spread out doing their own
right.
thing. That's how it felt back then. When I moved back here in 06, there was one of my former troops, Smarty Pants Theater Company, was still touring and stuff. That's disbanded since then. But our big thing is, yes, we've made our home at the No Theater. Mm-hmm. We're the house team of the No Theater, which is right down there in the heart of the renovation of
yeah.
OTR and stuff. It's such a great view.
How often do you guys perform at the No?
We perform 4 times a month.
Okay.
We have a first Monday jam, which that's free. Then we have a second Wednesday improv jam at the Christian Moorline House, the Logger House
yeah.
that's up in OTR, not the one that's down the river. So I guess the tap room at the Logger House.
Right.
Then the third Tuesday show at the No Theater. And then actually this Friday at 10:30, we have our final Friday show. We usually do a show after the No Theater has their main stage show.
Oh, very cool. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so any more improv news that people need to know? Because I have some comic book questions for you.
I think the thing is, if you haven't seen a show in Cincinnati and you are local, feel free to come out. There's a lot of great troupes around town. And I think the big thing is with our free jams that we offer, come out and do a show. Because we get to actually be a part of the new theater through what they call the Jackson Street Market, which they allow us to use their resources and stuff like that, as well as give us a rehearsal space. And I think it's one of those things that if you ever look at improv and you're like, oh, that looks like fun, it is fun. Everyone that does it, that's exactly how they got into it.
Yeah.
Definitely say yes to yourself and go out and do it.
Awesome. All right. So that's the Improv Festival of Cincy, Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. They're found at ifcincy.com. That's with a Y. And you're also ifcincy on Twitter, correct?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
So definitely look those guys up. Give them a follow. And September 10th through the 13th, you're not doing anything interesting. Go watch some fun improv. All right. Comics.
Yes. Let's do this.
So you have a just in my lore of comic collectionism, whatever the sickness is that it's called for us comic book fans. When we met well over 10 years ago, I had been out of comics for, I don't know, like 3 or 4 years. It was right after college. I'd spent many years being a poor college student trying to decide if I wanted to be a journalist or what. And we were working a really weird job together, grading proficiency tests.
Oh my gosh.
And I remember you said, Kevin Smith is going to write Green Arrow. And I'm like, let's go to the store.
Let's do this.
Let's get it.
Yes.
So thank you for you know, the last, you know, 15 odd years of getting me back into this, and you know, my wallet hates you.
Yeah, it was one of those things. I remember going and having that moment of like, wow, I got this guy back into it, and you just steamrolled him right back into it. But yeah, that was right when Kevin Smith was about to write Green Arrow, and I think he had just done Daredevil.
He did.
With Marvel Knights. Yeah, I remember that. And that was back when Quesada was still illustrating before mm-hmm. he was editor-in-chief at Marvel.
So, because I remember you brought me into Queen City for the first time. So, you know, we've mentioned it before, Queen City Comics. It's our local show, or our local comic book shop. We love it.
It's the place I was going to since I was 16.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the ads for it for old Star Trek The Next Generation at midnight reruns and stuff.
So that's like floating around on YouTube somewhere. And I've promised Jeff I would never go look for it.
I so want to find it. Because I tell people about it and I haven't found it. But yes.
I built their website and I found this old picture of him from the newspaper. And he's holding like all these like Spider-Man comics up, like mm-hmm. Like Hal Jordan holding the rings when he killed the Green Lantern Corps on that cover. And when I first like showed him a sample of the site, it was just all that picture on every page just to mess with him.
I remember in that ad, it was back when X-Men number one that Jim Lee illustrated mm-hmm. was out.
Yeah.
And everyone, including their mothers, bought that issue.
Yeah. So, well, cool. So are you reading anything currently? Or are you more of just checking out the movies and the TV shows?
Definitely more of the movies and TV shows recently within the past year and a half. As I said, I've kind of gotten out of going each week and getting issues and stuff. The one thing I will still do is I'm still getting the graphics.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely loving Saga right now.
Yeah.
Fiona Staples, I love her illustrations, especially her figurative work. I'm still following The Walking Dead, and I think with me with The Walking Dead recently, like I felt like it dipped a little bit, and now I feel like it's kind of caught its magic again.
I'm excited with this current story arc with the Whisperers or whatever
exactly.
They're called.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And well, I don't want to spoil anything if you're not fully up to date.
I was thinking of like one of the tragic deaths of the main characters in issue 100 that actually depressed me for 2 or 3 weeks, if not longer.
The panel sequence of that
is
haunting. Like, I still get freaked out about it. And, like, I'll go back and I'll read that comic just, like, if I'm feeling, like, down or weird. I'm like, this is just going to send me deeper into that mood.
It's not gonna
bring
you out.
You know, it's like, I'm just, like, it's like diving deeper into the depression. What's up, Brian Williams?
Oh, hello.
Brian Williams joined us late.
Yes.
So, Brian, Dave Powell, Brian Williams.
What's going on,
Dave? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Dave is the co-director of the No Theater Improv, or OTR Improv.
Yes, OTR Improv, so, Palsim of the No Theater.
So
Dave's got an awesome voice. Dave, talk some more, man, so I can hear that voice. Damn.
It's silky and smooth and rich.
baritone.
So,
and yet I'm a very skinny, wiry, bald, white guy, bearded. Shouldn't have this voice whatsoever. Well,
I've got a...
Dave looks like everybody, the hipster you think would do improv. That's what
Dave looks like. I'm such an improv cliche, it's not even funny.
I don't know if he told you, but I do my own comic book, Lucius Hammer, and the artist, Christian Colbert, has the coolest deep voice. I mean, he sounds like Barry White.
Nice.
He sounds like a brother, and he told me that I sounded like a white guy.
So he went and found the whitest sounding guy to make a podcast.
Just yes, to have the varying levels right there.
I'd have to give you that.
Okay. So, yeah, so Walking Dead, Saga. So, you know, the TV movies, I'm sure you watched Ant-Man.
Oh, loved Ant-Man. Loved it. Loved this past year. Loved Ant-Man. I think probably my favorite project from this past year was the Daredevil series on Netflix.
Yeah.
I think that landmark episode 2, the hallway fight that everyone references.
The old boy.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hooked everyone. Like, yeah, we see exactly where it came from. But man, did they do it good.
Yeah.
I liked, I think my favorite part was Kingpin.
Oh, yeah.
His emergence at the end. That's when I got goosebumps.
His whole thing about that monologue about the Samaritan.
Oh, yeah.
And then when he realizes he was one guy and he realizes he's the terror and he's the evil. Right. And just that switch. And then you see that long tracking shot of him when he's walking down the road.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome.
Oh, brilliant. And then it all still ends in a street fight in a back alley.
Yeah. Like you wanted it to that entire time. For me, the episode, like, obviously I was hooked right from the jump, but like, episode 3 where it showed both sides of Matt. The burgeoning street vigilante and the badass lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I'm in. Like, I don't care what they do for the rest of the season. I love it. I'm watching all 13 hours in one day anyway. So,
Just keeps making me think just how incredible a creator Stan Lee is. If he actually did all of this, if he actually created all of this, he's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, he just dropped gold nuggets on us.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I mean, Daredevil is not an A-list hero at Marvel, but now he is.
Well, and what you will about maybe what currently Frank Miller has been doing, back then in the 80s when he set the tone of the Daredevil and changed the whole storyline.
And then turned around and did it with the Dark Knight.
Exactly.
You know, Batman same story.
Batman is basically Daredevil.
Yeah.
Batman lifted from, because Batman was in a malaise at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then Frank Miller jumps on and and takes him where he took Daredevil. I mean, it still works for Batman, but essentially it came from Daredevil.
Yep.
You know, so.
All right. Well, I know you got to get out of here. Mm-hmm. So,
sadly, I can do this all night.
You can come back anytime, man, and we'll just talk comics. We'll give you homework.
Please. So. I feel like it was like an iceberg. We just saw the top. There's still so much underwater.
Exactly.
I could instantly talk about.
We see what's underwater every week here. It's supposed to be an hour show.
But. It hasn't been an hour show since the second week. All right. So, Dave Powell, IF Cincy. It's the Improv Festival of Cincinnati, September 10th through the 13th. What time does it start on the 10th?
Starts at 7 o'clock on the 10th.
Cool. Festivities going on all weekend. Awesome, Dave. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian.
All right. Thank you.
Brian. Yep.
All right. And we're back. Thank you, Dave. So everybody, make sure you check out IF Cincy. It's the Improv Festival of Cincinnati, September 10th through the 13th. That's going to be it this week. This has been the Infamous Podcast.
Read more comics.
All right. You guys can find us at the Infamous Podcast on infamouspodcast.com, at Infamous Podcast on Twitter. If you want to email us and let us know what you think, it's theinfamouspodcast@gmail.com. Brian, where can they find you online?
If you want to read my comics or, you know, put me to the test, since I'm always putting everybody else to the test, I'm at www.ravenhammercomics.com. I'm also, you can search Lucius Hammer on Facebook and see what I've been doing with that character, Lucius Hammer. I also have Harlem Shadow on Facebook. Search the Harlem Shadow. Or just get at us. Send us an email, you want to see some things that we do or side projects, always you can contact us. Like I try to remind you at the end of every episode, this is a community. You know, Brian and I just happen to be running this little show, but I mean, you guys are part of it too. Also, bring some people to the show for us. We want to get our numbers up. We want to do this more often and expand into different episodes. I know I would like to. So please spread the word and share and repost with us.
Yeah, help us out. Go on to iTunes and hook us up with a 5-star review. Those really help in the search rankings. And, you know, this week, why don't you tell us what you thought and use the real the hashtag #RealWalkingDead. Let us know what you thought about F the Walking Dead and, you know, the whole Batgirling thing, because it's really interesting and dangerous for DC to be making that kind of a statement.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and I want you guys to understand this, we make a difference to what these companies produce. And if we make enough noise and we talk about it enough, they will change and they will produce what we want to see. And at the end of the day, we all want to see better comics. So make some noise, vote with your dollars and you know, comments, speak up.
All right, guys, that's been the Infamous Podcast this week. I'm Brian Tudor.
Brian Williams.
All right, thank you.
Deuces.
Later.